is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Later this year, a new public transportation project gets up and running in New Hampshire. East-West bus service from the seacoast to the Manchester Airport. The move comes after decades of calls for such a service between the port and Queen cities. And finally, a few years ago, a federal air quality grant helped make it possible. And that success has Concord officials now wondering if the capital city could also get a bus to the airport. According to the Concord Monitor, the city's senator, Democrat Sylvia Larson, is meeting with officials today on that very subject. Despite renewed interest in buses, however, nearly 90% of miles traveled per person in New Hampshire are made in motor vehicles. And when it comes to the roads and bridges we all drive on, our guest today has grave concerns. We're talking this hour with Chris Clement, commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Transportation since 2011. Clement's been outspoken in presenting the challenges the state's infrastructure faces. Almost 40% of state roads in poor condition and 140 red-listed bridges. And he's been equally outspoken about the choices before the state, saying if we really want these items fixed, it's going to take more money. Today in The Exchange, Transportation Commissioner Chris Clement is back, and let's hear from you. With state dollars still tight, what should be the department's priority? And what do you think can wait? Where should the money come from to improve transportation? Where shouldn't it come from? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org is the address, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And Commissioner Clement, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura. I'm glad to be back. Thank you.
Well, I want to ask you about a recent report put out by the New Hampshire Good Roads Association called A Legislative Call to Action. It's pretty stark, Commissioner, saying that our transportation infrastructure here in New Hampshire is in, as they put it, serious trouble, and that it's deteriorating rapidly. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think that over the last few years, actually more than the last few years, the last two decades, we've seen the increased deterioration become more. It's been more rapid, more quick, because we haven't been doing the preservation and maintenance the amount that we'd like to do. And it's a similar process with the old adage: your roof on your house. If you have a leak and you don't fix it, the problem becomes bigger. It's the same thing with our roads. You just mentioned a moment ago that 37% of our roads are in poor condition, and that's right. That's about 1,500 miles of roads. 19% right now, what we call good condition, and the good, fair, and poor condition that we talk about isn't based on what New Hampshire DOT and what Chris Clement says it is. It's based on national standards, and the standards that we 50 states all use as a similar benchmark. So that's where we're at as of right now.
Well, the group that I quoted again, the New Hampshire Good Roads Association, represents those who work on roads, like engineers and contractors. So they've got a little bit of a vested interest in seeing road work grow. Are they exaggerating just a little bit, Commissioner? Serious trouble?
I think it depends on where you look. The whole entire state is not in serious condition from a roads perspective, but almost 40% are in poor condition. That's not good, and those numbers continue to trend upwards. If you're living on one of the unnumbered state routes like East Conway Road or Meredith Neck Road, we get letters from them periodically saying that our roads, your state road, sir, is in very bad disrepair, and we need to do something about it. And those 970 miles of unnumbered state routes, Laura, are the ones that we're getting to less and less. Right now, with the available funding that we have, we're just trying to keep the good roads good and keep commerce and people and the economy moving. And those 970 miles of unnumbered state routes are being, put last to do.
Let's talk about the money, because you've been in the headlines suggesting, not necessarily calling for, but suggesting a higher gas tax. What are you trying to say there, Commissioner Clement?
Well, I would say more that I'm educating. I've been out throughout the state. I've spoke to over 700 people since September, and I'm going to continue to keep that pace up through June 30th till the end of the legislative session, educating and discussing what the needs are for transportation and what that equates to in terms of dollars. So I'm very respectful in terms of the legislature. The legislature has the job to fund it. It's very easy for me to say this is what we need, but it's also very difficult for the legislature to come up with those funds. And you know, we are a very conservative state, and I love that. And I'm a fiscally minded, fiscally conservative guy, and I'm glad that we're that way. But I think we've reached a point that it's actually going to cost us much more if we continue on this current path. So we need to invest. We need to invest strategically. If you look at Massachusetts, for example, Governor Deval Patrick has this $1.2 billion transportation program that he unveiled last week. He's positioning his state. He's trying to get his state set for the next decades, and we need to do the same thing. I actually think that we, New Hampshire, are smarter than Massachusetts, and we can't allow that to happen because there are businesses that want to come into Salem. There are businesses that want to move up the I-93 corridor. The North Country, as you know, is depressed and needs help. And, the sooner we get Interstate, for example, Interstate I-93 finished, that project finished, the better we're going to be as a state. That's the backbone of our state. We need to get that project finished.
So you said it'll cost us more if we don't make the investments now. Tease that out a little bit for us, Commissioner.
So here's an example. What I've been saying as I've been out talking is that it costs on average, rough numbers, about $51,000 to keep a good or fair road in good or fair condition, okay? If you let that road go, like Meredith Neck Road or East Conway Road, it's $1.1 million to do a toll reclamation to fix that road up.
Way more than twice as much.
$51,000 to keep good or fair road in good or fair condition, or $1.1 million to do a toll reclamation. And this summer, East Conway Road, we had to get up there. We did one mile section of it. There's still more to do, but we were able to do the worst section of that road. It was $1.1 million. And there's other instances throughout the state where we've done small pieces, and on average, it's $1.1 million to do a toll reclamation. Again, the analogy with your roof, you let that leak go for a long time, then you repeat replacing rafters, drywall, so on and so on and so on. But it's exponential with roads.
Well, so we talked about the gas tax. And again, you're not saying this is what we should do, but you have been saying this is an option we could look at. How much of an increase do you think would do it, given the improvements that you just talked about, and given that it hasn't been raised in more than 20 years, since 1991, I think.
21 years, that's right. Let's just talk about Representative Campbell's bill. What Representative Campbell did was
he's the head of the Transportation Committee, David Campbell from
Nashua. That's right. That's correct. So David Campbell came to the Department of Transportation, says, I'm going to introduce a gas tax bill next session, including a registration fee. And I want to know, when we look at I-93, when we look at State Aid Bridge Program, when we look at all the other assets that we need to fix up, roads and bridges, so on and so forth, and the communities, the municipalities, how much do we need in terms of pennies in order to make that work? So what we did was provided those numbers to Representative Campbell, and then he backed into his bill that way. So the 4 cent per year gas tax, along with a $5 registration fee for 3 consecutive years, would pay the bonds on I-93. We have $250 million left, so it would pay the $250 million bond for I-93. It would double our state aid bridge program. Okay, it would go from $6.8 million a year to roughly $17 million a year in year 3, which is fantastic. That program right now is subscribed out to 2021. So last year, for example, we closed down 11 municipal bridges, and we have more and more municipalities coming to us saying, DOT, we need help. We have a red-listed bridge, for example. And, Laura, the municipalities have 353 red-list bridges. The state, we have 140. So they're almost 3 times as much. So Representative Campbell's bill in the third year would double that amount for state aid bridge. It would also increase our block grant aid. Today, cities and towns, we have about $30 million that goes into our block grant aid program. Under Representative Campbell's bill, that would go up to $45 million a year in year 3. So you'd get 50% more than you're getting today if the bill was passed in its current form.
I have one more question for you on this, Commissioner, but I also want to invite our listeners to join us. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're talking with the Department of Transportation Commissioner Christopher Clement, covering everything from road and bridge projects to ways of funding transportation improvements. Let's get your opinions, your thoughts, and questions. In an era of limited funds, what priorities do you think should be on the top of the transportation list? And what do you think can wait? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Also, how do you think we should pay for any improvements, including some of the ones that we're talking about today? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So, Commissioner, the argument against increasing the gas tax has always been, look, times are tight. This is cash right out of people's wallets. What's your response to that?
I can understand that response. And you're right that the economy still hasn't rebounded. Money is still tight for businesses and for individuals. So, I mean, that's always a concern. Whenever you're raising taxes or fees, that's a concern, and I completely get it. You know, one of the questions that people ask is that is it a one-for-one tax, more or less? If the gas tax was raised by some amount tomorrow, would you then the following day go to the gas station? Would you pay that amount that it went up at the gas pump? Let's say it was 4 cents. So if the gas tax went up today, would you pay 4 cents per gallon more at the gas pump? And that's not necessarily the case. It may go up 1 cent. It may go up 2 cents. It may not go up at all. It may go down. It's based on competition. It's the distributors and the oil companies that control that part of the formula. It's not us. I mean, for example, New Hampshire has the lowest gas tax in New England, okay? And there are areas that you can go in Maine, for example. Maine's at 31 cents a gallon. We're at 18 cents a gallon. You can go in Maine and buy gasoline less than what you can purchase it for in New Hampshire.
Don't you think, though, that distributors would use the 4 cent increase, if that's what we're talking about, as a good excuse to raise the overall cost by 4 cents? Hey, that's a good cover.
I guess they could. You know, everything in life is based on supply and demand, so they have to compete. So if you have multiple gasoline diesel stations on a road, they're going to have to compete. So at some point, one of them is going to drop the price in order to increase their volume of their product, and therefore the others either follow or they're going to be harmed financially. So,
all right. Well, coming up, we'll talk about a lot more issues, including tolls and some of the other issues that you mentioned earlier, Commissioner Clement. We'll also take your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Good morning. It's 9:19. More of the exchange coming up on NHPR and at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, new immigration reform plans. Card-carrying members of NHPR can take advantage of special benefits all over the state. Restaurants, museums, theaters, lodgings, new businesses are signing up every week to offer discounts to NHPR member card holders. Visit NHPR.org for all available discounts and more information about the NHPR member card. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from AutoBeef, a website providing information for vehicle owners about squeaks, bangs, flashing lights, odd smells, and other vehicle complaints, online at carcomplaints.com. And from the NEEF Network Organizations, hosting Destination College, a college planning convention for high school juniors and parents in March. Information at destinationcollege.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with Christopher Clement, the Department of Transportation's commissioner. We invite you to join us with your questions and comments. It's your chance to talk to the commissioner about the state of our roads, bridges, and public transportation. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. As we look at limited funds in the state budget, what priorities do you see for our transportation infrastructure? What do you think should be at the top of the list? What projects do you think can wait? Also, as we look at how to fund transportation improvements, how do you think we should pay for them? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Clement, here's an email that we just got from Steve. Two simple words, he says, toll increases.
Well, I guess. Well, let me answer that different. The New Hampshire Department of Transportation has two primary funding sources. So we talk about the highway fund, which is made up of registration fees, gas tax, and court fines from when state police give out fines. And then we have the New Hampshire Turnpike System. So the New Hampshire Turnpike System is an enterprise fund in itself, and we take in about $117 million per year in tolls, but those tolls have to stay on the turnpike. So if we have excess revenue after we pay all our bonds off and all our fees and our maintenance and operations for that year, we cannot take any excess revenue from turnpikes and use it on the DOT highway fund side of the house. So when we're talking about the lack of funding and the need for funding, it's really the highway fund side of the house. Turnpikes is a separate entity. Although DOT Turnpikes is part of the family, it has a separate funding source.
And how are the turnpikes doing relative to the other side of the house, as you put it?
The turnpikes are doing better than the highway fund.
Really? Because yes. They're better funded?
Well, yes, they're better funded. We have individuals and businesses that buy our bonds. So we have what they call these bond covenants, mean that we have to invest in that system because people have bonds, so we have to reinvest. Otherwise, they might stand to lose their investment. So we have to keep up on the turnpike system. We have to invest. We invest between $8 and $10 million a year on our turnpikes every year. That's why the turnpikes look good. That's why that there's always work going on the turnpikes. But it's one of those difficult discussions when you're trying to talk about the need for investment in New Hampshire DOT and the highway fund, and people that are coming across the border on our turnpikes, they see that the grass is always mowed. They see that the pavement is always good. The bridges are always in good shape. But it's another part. It's a different part. And you know, strategically, I'm not talking about turnpikes during this legislative session because people get confused.
Well, and they're taken care of, it sounds like.
They are. But, I mean, in the future, we have another big capital program that we're going to start talking about this summer regarding the turnpikes, which is very exciting in terms of where we want to be in the future. So,
how hard would it be to turn other roads into turnpikes? I mean, if the turnpike system, this whole idea of the user pays and, you know, dedicated funding, why not just turn all of our major roads into turnpikes?
That's a good question. We actually did that back in 2009. We sold the Interstate I-95 high-level bridge from the highway fund of New Hampshire DOT to the turnpike fund of New Hampshire DOT. And that bridge was contiguous on the Blue Star Turnpike, so it made sense. The highway fund had been doing the maintenance work, and turnpikes was paying for that. So we sold the bridge for $120 million. Again, from highways to turnpikes, so turnpike fund paid the highway fund $120 million, and we've been living off that $120 million for the last 4 years. Now, to answer your question specifically, if we started to take all the highway roads and make them turnpike roads, then that would it could potentially affect our bond rating. We have a very, very favorable bond rating because we are a conservative state and we maintain the system. Number two, and then it would also start to financially harm the turnpike system over time. So if you start putting more roads that need to be fixed and you start a larger financial cash draw on the turnpike system, you're going to be in the same situation that we're in now on the highway side.
Thanks for that email, Steve. It's a question, and I think a lot of people have, why not just do that? So easier said than done,
That's
basically.
That's a very good question. Very good question.
Again, the email address is exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Here's an email from Ben in Manchester. Please ask your guest if it would not make more sense to remove some of these roads and bridges. This would help us focus on projects like finishing the 93 project, basically the greatest good for the limited funds we have. It's an interesting thought, Ben. You know, all this angst about red-listed bridges, for example. Can you just shut some of them down?
That's lots of good questions today. And we're sort of doing that now, where the 970 miles of unnumbered state routes that I was talking about earlier, we're touching them less and less and less. And some folks have even said, you know, why don't you even take up the pavement and just make them a gravel road? And I think if we stayed on this current path that we're on now, perhaps we would do that. The issue with that, and here's another one. I was reading a letter from a constituent this weekend regarding a bridge in Milton that connects Milton, New Hampshire, and Lemon in Maine. We closed the bridge down, or actually Maine DOT closed the bridge down, I guess it was a year or two ago, but the residents want it back. The issue is funding. So do you take the bridge down or do you replace it? From what I understand, there's a couple businesses right across the river, and the locals in Milton would typically go across the river, right across the river, to frequent that business, and business has been off because of that. The same, you could look at the same with the three bridges in Portsmouth, right? I know there was a lot of debate when we took the Memorial Bridge down, and our counterparts in Maine were saying, listen, we can't continue to fund three bridges on the Piscataqua River, one of them has to go away.
Yeah.
And there was discussion with regarding eliminating the Memorial Bridge.
A lot of angst about that.
And making it a pedestrian walkway. In the end, we replaced it, a full replacement. We're working on it now. Be open in July. But, you know, those are questions that are going to involve certainly the governor and policymakers and the public alike. It's not just going to be a DOT discussion.
Well, and Ben, I appreciate your broader point about looking at the greatest good for unlimited funds. And along those lines, Commissioner, I wanted to ask you about that bus project that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. This
right.
is the new bus service
right.
From Portsmouth to Manchester Airport. Also, we talked last week about the revival of rail in New Hampshire with the expected approval of a study of the so-called Capital Corridor, linking up Nashua and Manchester and Concord to Boston. So we can talk about those projects individually in a minute, but more broadly, given that, you know, almost 90% of person miles traveled in New Hampshire are by car, mm-hmm. why even invest in these bus and rail projects? Why even go there?
Well, I think when you look at demographics, certainly for our generation and the greatest generation, the folks that are a little bit more truer than us in life, we like our cars. We've grown up with our automobiles. But I think that if you look at the younger demographics, certainly I know my children, and if you look at UNH, for example, more of the younger generation want to ride mass transit, whether it's transit buses or rail. Case in point, UNH, for example, over the last couple of years, I've seen a dramatic decrease of their permits for students to park cars.
They just don't want
an automobile. They'd rather spend $140 a month on an iPhone or a smartphone than on a car payment. They'd rather get on Amtrak, for example, and take it down to Boston or wherever they're going back and forth. Same thing with transit, and we're seeing that. So I think if we want to, again, I'm going to go back to positioning our state because, you know, I always worry about are we doing this the right thing for our state, you know, 1, 5, 10, 50 years out. In all modes of transportation, and the future generations are going to want more to ride on bus. They're going to want more to ride on trains, and we have to be cognizant of that. We can't just put our heads in the sand and say, you know, we're a road and bridge and car state. It's not going to be the future, and it's not going to be good for us in the long run.
Our phone number again is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And let's take Dave in Bedford. Hi, Dave. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, that wasn't a very long wait. well, my question for the commissioner, I want to make, you know, he wants all this money from the people to be funded, you know, through taxation mostly, I take it. But I want to make sure he's not standing in the way of this problem being fixed in other ways. For instance, what would happen to me if I had a company and I tried to build a road along that area? Would he be all over me like stink on flies, or would the authorities be supportive? And if you're supportive, how many hoops are you going to force that private contractor to go through in order to fix this problem himself?
So you're talking about privatizing roads there, kind of like they do from Chicago to Indiana. Is that what you're talking about, Dave?
Well, there are private roads in the country. There's not that many.
Yeah.
Disneyland is a good example of a very good private road system. But by and large, it's all been kind of monopolized by the government. And I'm concerned that you're just sucking the air out of the room when if you just walked away from it, the people would step forward and solve the problem for profit.
Okay. Dave, thanks for calling. What do you think, Commissioner?
Boy, I don't know how to answer that question. I guess what I can say that any funding that we do or potentially get this session is going to go back into the road and bridge and transportation network, whether it's transit, trains, you know, road and bridge. We're not going to increase employees at the Department of Transportation. We're going to take those funds and we're going to turn around and put them back out in terms of contracts to fix up our transportation network.
I guess the bigger picture that I get from Dave's call anyway is, you know, this idea of making roads more of a private enterprise with, you know, government oversight maybe saying, here's where we need to improve and, you know, here's what we hope you'll do, but making it a little bit more of a private venture.
Well, there are, and I think as Dave said, there are roads in the country that have been sold to private equity firms, you know, public-private partnerships, for example. There's one in Indiana, the Indiana Tollway that was sold to a firm outside the United States. And I think that if you talk to Indiana today, they may not, might not make the same decisions they made years ago to sell that. And once that happens, then that consortium owns that road, they can increase tolls, they can increase fees and taxes in order to maintain that asset while they lease it or buy it from the state.
So it could cost even more.
It potentially could cost more, yes.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave, for the call. I appreciate the point. And here's an email from Tom in Rye. He says, would you ask your guests the role that lobbyists play in the process of understanding the state's transportation needs and priorities?
Well, I think, you know, lobbyists, whether you're in Washington, D.C. or state or local government, they're involved. And I think that lobbyists have a place in our process. And I, prior to coming to state government, being in the private sector, I had this connotation of a lobbyist, okay? I look and think of lobbyists, especially the good ones, much different than I did prior to coming in. I think it was more ignorance before I came into work in public sector. I think lobbyists have a very important role, and they're the good ones educate. They don't oversell, okay? The good ones don't oversell. They educate, and they help the process along. And I like working with lobbyists. I think that they help me understand, and they also they help others in the whole process understand why we're doing what we're doing.
Do you think sometimes, though, they do exaggerate the condition of the roads? I mean, we started off talking about this report by a group,
right,
which represents contractors, saying, you know, terrible, terrible trouble on our roads. Maybe I'm only driving on the good ones, Commissioner, but they don't seem that bad to me.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, they can. Again, that's why I say the good ones, right? The good ones only tell, you know, they're not trying to oversell. They tell really the facts. And I'm an engineer. I'm a numbers guy. I look at the data, okay? And I look at how we harvest the data. I look at what sources we use for the data, how we compare to other states that are using like data. And the numbers are the numbers. So Sarah Long Bridge in Portsmouth, I mean, that we had an issue with that the end of last week. That bridge was down for 3 days. I was there with our bridge maintenance crews while we were working on the bridge, and that's our number one red-listed bridge in the state. It needs to be replaced. It's one of 140 red-list bridges that we're continuing to work on. So to answer your question specifically, some lobbyists can maybe over-exaggerate a little bit because it's a self-fulfilling type of thing, but I think for the most part, certainly the ones I work with, are on par, and they're honest, and they're just trying to do the right thing.
By the way, real quick, that was big news when that happened last week, the Sarah Long Bridge. It was a red-listed bridge, as you said, the number one. Did it crack because of the cold? I mean, what happened over there?
No, what happened was is we were exercising the bridge. It's something that you typically do during the wintertime because grease gets cold, the motors get cold, the drives that drive the motors get cold. So we were running the bridge up and down because we had a ship that was coming out later in the afternoon. And what happened is the bridge, the horizontal lift span got skewed, and when it got skewed, it actually popped out of its track, which is the first time it's ever happened. If you picture a louver door in your house, the bridge actually popped out. This is a much bigger version, and as a result of that, there was some major structural damage that was done on the lower part of the horizontal lift span, so that's what we had to work on. We had to put big sections of steel I-beam in place. We had to weld them in place and basically fabricate them on the spot right there. In those very, very challenging, you know, conditions. I think it was 15 below zero one day, you know, wind gusts of 25
wow.
knots. It was really, really cold.
Let's take another call if we could, Commissioner. Again, the number for you to join us on The Exchange as we look at transportation here in the Granite State, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Josh is calling from Newbury. Hi, Josh. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Laura. And Chris, you've inherited a heck of a mess, starting seeing how you've only been there since 2011. But I guess what I wanted to say was that I'm a small business owner. We're in the excavating business, and the roads in our area are just, you know, beyond horrendous. I mean, don't even get to the unnumbered ones. The numbered ones are terrible. I mean, recently you've been spending some money here, but it's nowhere near enough. And as a business owner, I don't want my taxes go up, but I mean, we're already spending $6,000-$7,000 a year in road taxes between all of our different vehicles and registrations and fuel taxes. But I could get behind the increase if there was two things. If we could get some assurance that this money isn't going to all get spent down on 93 or from Concord South, where I mean, I have yet to go anywhere south of Concord and find a road that's in even close to the poor conditions that we deal with. And then as a sidebar, it drives me crazy to see some of this wasted money. I mean, it was before you, but, you know, the state spent $1.5 million for this van that rides around to tell people how poor the roads are. I mean, come sit in one of our big trucks and try and sit in the seat, and you'll see how bad this is.
Josh, this is a great question. You know, a concern that, okay, go ahead and raise the gas tax, but let's not devote all that money to Interstate 983. There are many parts of the state, including Josh's part of the state, that are also hurting.
That's right. And I think if I go back to the statement that I made earlier, when the department was asked, you know, by Senator Morse, who has a bill that he's putting forward, you know, a gaming bill, and Representative Campbell that has his bill going forward with gas tax, what the needs are, we didn't break it up just for Interstate I-93, for example. We looked at roads. We looked at bridges. We looked at what we could do for the municipalities. I think this is – it's big. You need to include the municipalities in this discussion as well. So we're not just looking at, Josh, you know, finishing I-93, although I really, again, I'm very passionate about finishing it. We need to get it done while the bonding costs are low, the construction costs are low, and material prices are low. And we'll create lots of jobs and position our state against Massachusetts in the future. But, you know, you're right. There are – we need to get after these roads. There's no question, but it comes down to funding. And depending on what funding we get, and this is going to play itself out. This is nothing that I have control over. It's the legislature. Depending on what funding we get, we're going to break it up into these different buckets. And if we get more funding than less, then it's going to be more funding that's going out into these different areas.
So reassuring him that if there were a gas tax increase, right, it wouldn't all go to I-93.
Right. If yes, correct. And regarding your point on the van, that, by the way, that van was $1 million. And that van's very important because we can go out and get the data that I was talking about earlier, the analysis to understand where we are at. And states, other states do have a van like that. And it's, you know, we did a cost-benefit analysis on whether it would be less expensive for us to purchase that van and run it into the ground like we do. We run the wheels off our vehicles. They're, you know, 15, 20 years old versus bringing an outside firm in to do it for us. So it was the cost-benefit analysis came back that it was less expensive for New Hampshire taxpayers to purchase that van and we use it versus bringing an outside firm in that can, you know, fluctuate the price depending on, again, supply and demand. Lots of states are looking at their roads now, and if there were very few vans, the cost is very high.
All right. Well, thank you, Josh, for the call. Lots of good points to talk about, and good luck with your business. Our phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And coming up, we'll talk more about funding roads and bridges here in New Hampshire. Commissioner, I also want to ask you a couple questions about this new east-west bus service that's getting some play now. So a lot more to talk about after a short break. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Gripponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Gripponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at gripponi.com. And Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England, online at haslaw.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, unliking your boss. We'll look at a federal ruling hailed as a victory for free speech on social media. You can complain about your employers on Facebook without fear of being fired. Plus, the home funeral movement. More and more mourners are making all the arrangements a family affair. Word of Mouth lifts the veil on new ideas today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, national defense expert and former Reagan defense official Lawrence Korb makes a case for cutting back on military spending. Email us before the show if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today on The Exchange, a discussion with the head of New Hampshire's Department of Transportation, Chris Clement. Join us with your questions and calls about roads, bridges, buses, and rail here in the Granite State. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Clement, before we go back to our listeners, we've been talking a lot this hour about how you pay for all these improvements. You know, somebody mentioned tolls. Someone called about privatization. Of course, we talked about the gas tax because that's been in the news a lot with the proposal before the legislature to raise it. You mentioned in passing just before the break, Senator Chuck Morse's gaming bill for expanded gambling We're going to talk about gambling on this show on Friday. But what's the connection between a gaming bill and transportation?
You know, similar to Representative Campbell's bill for a gas tax and registration fee increase, if you will, Senator Morse also has a bill that he's putting forward that would help transportation as well. It's a gaming bill. And, you know, I guess it remains to be seen where the site's going to be located and so on and so forth. But Senator Morse reached out to the department early on in the session, said that he's very interested in transportation, very interested in funding, finding a way to fund some of these issues, whether it be red list bridges and roads, certainly I-93, and that he was going to be working on legislation for a gaming bill. So I think that's great. I mean, I'm very thankful to Senator Morse and Representative Campbell and others to notice the need that we need to invest in transportation, and they're doing that this session.
You know, we talked earlier very briefly, Commissioner, about this new east-west bus service, again, from Portsmouth to Manchester Airport. This is a huge deal. Over the years, we've received so many calls about this whenever we have a transportation commissioner on. People call in and say, there's no east-west bus service. Give us the details, when this starts and what kind of route we're talking about.
Okay, so another good question, Laura. So this actually goes back to 2008, this East-West bus service, when we just started talking about it seriously in the department. So basically, it's going to start March, April of this year. This spring. We're working on the details right now. It's going to be 3 years of operating funds. It's called the acronym is CMAQ, C-M-A-Q, Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Funds. We get about $8.5 million of CMAQ funds per year, and this east-west bus service is going to be funded 3 years operating in capital in this when we start this up. So there's basically four stops. It's going to stop at the Portsmouth Transportation Center where C&J is on the P's.
C&J is the bus
yep,
service,
right there.
The big intercity bus service down to Boston.
That's correct. Yeah. So that's actually a DOT facility, so that's where the process is going to start. They're going to stop in Epping. We also have an Epping park and ride right off of 101, Route 125, downtown Manchester, which is good, and then Manchester Airport, which is good. So that'll help passengers that want to go to Manchester Airport.
Yeah, Manchester Airport's been struggling in recent years.
Absolutely, and I think anything that we can do to get passengers to Manchester would be good. Mark Brewer has been asking the department for this since the day I showed up in 08. This is something we need to do. We really need to look at this. Again, I think you said riders have been asking to that. C&J has been very, very, very successful in going into Boston and elsewhere. So this would be a much smaller model. We're going to start, again, trying to be fiscally responsible, conservative. Let's start small, right? Let's with these four stops, let's see how the service works. And hopefully by year three, when the business has to be standalone, the owner has to take over. And by the way, this is Flightline. Flightline is running the service for us, that the service will take off and flourish.
Two super quick questions for you, Commissioner, and then I do want to go back to our listeners. Portsmouth, Epping, downtown Manchester, and Manchester Airport. Durham, UNH, you talked earlier about the students who don't want to own cars. They want to take the train. They want to take the bus. No stop in Durham.
Right, that's right. And at this moment in time, there's no stop in Durham. But I guess let's see what happens. I know that there is interest to go into Durham. And maybe as part of this, there could be a feeder service that would go from UNH maybe to Portsmouth or to Epping. And then from there, we could pick up those riders from that point forward. But we need to talk about that.
And according to the Concord Monitor yesterday, Senator Sylvia Larson is pushing for a bus from Concord to the Manchester Airport. How likely is that?
Well, I think that's something that's recently come forward to us. We're looking into it. As a matter of fact, there's someone working on that as we speak right now. But I think stay tuned on that one. I don't have any real specifics in terms of where that's going to go. But we're listening. We're gathering information, and then we'll do our analysis from there.
Well, and as you look and listen and gather information, as you said, you know, it would seem like Durham is the area where there's a lot of people concentrated who don't have cars, young people.
That's right. So. That's right. So again, I think with East-West bus, we'll see how it works with, you know, Portsmouth, Epping, Manchester, downtown Manchester, Manchester Airport. And if the ridership numbers are strong, if we do see strong ridership, we need to have those discussions. I know Steve Pesci at UNH has talked about that. He's very passionate about that as well. But I think the project originally started with those four stops, And if we can leverage it and we can get the, you know, perhaps maybe another stop or a feeder service from UNH to one of these four stops, then we need to be open-minded and we need to look at that. We need to look at the numbers. We need to look at the ridership and not do this go off in a haphazard way.
Well, it's interesting because, again, people have called into this program for years and years and years wondering about East-West bus service. Let's go back to our listeners. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Frank's waiting in Bedford. Hi, Frank. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Good morning. It's a pleasure to get on with all the interest in this. Mr. Clement said we hadn't had a gas tax increase in 22 years. I wonder how many listeners haven't had a pay increase in 22 years. Americans love to whine about small things. My suggestion would be you need 4 cents a gallon, $5 increase in registration. Let's go ahead and do it. Get the roads improved. Look what happens when you're driving your car and you hit a pothole. If the roads are in bad shape, the maintenance costs on a car, the repairs that need to be done can get pretty expensive. 4 cents a gallon is a little over a 1% increase. And in 22 years, a 1% increase is chump change. It's nothing. Let's get on with it.
All right, Frank. Thank you very much for the call. And I guess the question I would have coming out of this, Commissioner, is does the legislature agree with Frank? Is this going to go through or not? I mean, it seems like the House, yes. The Senate, what do you think?
I think it just remains to be seen. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm taking the easy way out, but the short answer is I don't know. I mean, we're very early on into the session. And you've been around a very long time. As you said, Laura, you've seen these things. And it's a process, right? This is a very long process, and there's a lot of high highs, and there's a lot of low lows. And I think that what I see differently this time, and maybe it's because of the communication, that the need is real, the need is there. And as Frank said, it's been 22 years. And you're right, Frank, that the average motorist is spending $259 per year in New Hampshire, putting, you know, front-end alignment on their car, fixing bent rims, blown out tires, so on and so forth, and it's $267 million statewide. So would you rather spend, you know, $40, $45 per year for someone that's traveling 20,000 miles a year, $40 to $45 a year per year, and increase gas tax, or would you rather spend $259 a year?
Well, how are other states doing it? I mean, I'm sure other states are looking at crumbling infrastructure and red-listed bridges and so forth.
I think there are a number of different proposals. I think that Virginia, for example, is looking at increasing their sales and income tax. You know, when I meet with my peers from across the country, this is something that we talk about. That there's only maybe three states, the energy producing states, that are fine, that are cash rich, and they're able to make those investments in all forms of infrastructure, not just transportation. So it's an issue, and some states are more apt to raise gas tax or fees or licenses or so on and so forth, and others aren't. And we're a very conservative state. We're very, very thoughtful. And I love that. I love that about our state, that we are fiscally minded and we are watching our citizens' dollars. And I can tell you, as a private sector guy in manufacturing for 20 years prior to coming to state government, we watch our money very closely. We take it very, very seriously. So thank you, Frank.
All right, let's take another one. And this is Michael in Hanover. Hi, Michael. You're on the air with Commissioner Clement. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted, up here in Grafton County, there's a lot of thin lift overlays that get done kind of as holdover repairs for the roads. And so that's when you just put like a 3/4 inch or a 1 inch layer of asphalt. Mm-hmm. And I know I've looked at even some of your graphs and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's supposedly cost effective, but it seems like they just heave the next year and then fall apart, and it's almost like and they still cost a lot of money. And it just, to me, it seems like a waste in my experience, just because the plows scrape half of it off and it just heaves and cracks and the ride quality is no better. And I know full reconstruction is expensive, but I mean, do you guys really think that that's a cost-effective solution for a lot of these roads?
Good question, Michael. Thank you. Commissioner.
Well, let me answer the question in two parts. If we're doing a full width layer, like 3/4 inch, for example, we did some micro-servicing this year. We actually had a couple ribbon-cutting events to really bring interest to maintenance and preservation. And you can do those micro-servicing layers, thin layers, with a lot less. You're spending a few $100,000 instead of millions of dollars to do large stretches. We did one on Route 12, and actually we did the Kank as well. We did a section. I think what you're talking about is patching. We've been going out and patching and trying to hold roads together until we can get to them, until they're going to be paved. And that may be an area, a stretch of road that you're talking about where we went out last summer or the summer before, and we more or less just did a patch job just to hold the pavement together, again, until we get there and either do a total reclamation or a mill and fill or fixing up that section of road.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. And we do get that question a lot. You know, are you doing short term, long term? What's more cost effective and so forth?
We're just in a lot of instances, we're in the same thing in Route 108 in Durham. We've got it all patched together. And when we do that, sometimes the yellow lines in the process are taken out and it's confusing for drivers and we get those questions. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to keep the good roads good and we're trying to keep the bad roads held together best we can till we can get to them.
You know, we talked last week, Commissioner, about the revival of rail in New Hampshire with the expected approval of a study of the so-called Capital Corridor connecting with the MBTA in Lowell, Mass., through Nashua, Manchester, and ultimately Concord. But while we heard from a lot of listeners who thought this was a great idea, we heard from almost an equal number of people who questioned whether enough Granite Staters would really give up their cars and ride a train. I wonder what you think about that.
I think that I'd like to do the study. I think that there's a lot of passionate people on both sides of this discussion. It's in the time I've been in state government, this is the most passionate discussion when we talk about the New Hampshire Capital Corridor. And I think you're right. It's split 50-50 down the middle. And I'll go back to my earlier statement that I'm a numbers guy. I like to look at data. I'd like to have the study finished so we can look at the data to see if this service would sustain itself with fare box revenue from Boston to Nashua, for example, or from Boston to Manchester or Manchester Airport or Concord. My sense is, though, to answer your question, and I will answer your question, my sense is that if we went from Boston to Nashua, that the service would pay a very large percentage of the fare box and that there would be a small amount of subsidy in relative terms. I think that the Nashua area would be a perfect spot for a multimodal facility, having a true systems approach where you have bus and rail. So the bus would be the buses would feed the service there. People would get off the bus and then get on the train and go all points south from there. So my sense is if the Executive Council passes this GNC item in an upcoming vote, it's going to be on February 6th or February 20th. And we're working that process right now. But if the grant is passed and we're able to move forward, then I think that the information that comes back from the consultant will say that Nashua is probably a good place to start.
Speaking of multimodal, just got a great email from Don, who says, with many people, young and old, giving up cars and switching their bikes and electric bikes. He says there is a need for transportation, bike trails, paths, and lanes. He mentions there are sections of SR 121 at Atkinson where two small trucks and a bike cannot fit on the road. What are New Hampshire's plans? Don, thank you for bringing the bikes into this.
Yeah.
Within certain towns, yeah, that's a method of commuting for some folks.
Right, and that's a great question. And I think that, in the past, looking at pedestrian walkways, looking at bicycle bikeways, maybe weren't on, maybe wasn't a primary consideration. And I think that in our 10-year plan that we have now, and certainly going forward, we're cognizant of that. We're looking at that. We're looking at smart streets, so on and so forth. The new Memorial Bridge, for example, the deck is not a great deck. It's in terms of grading deck, doesn't have a grading type deck. It's a pavement deck. We also have a 6-foot wide bike shoulder. We also have a 5-foot wide pedestrian shoulder, which we didn't have before, but that was part of the new Memorial Bridge. I'm not familiar with the specific area that the caller spoke about, but I can tell you that as we go forward in the future, we're looking more and more at how do we accommodate bike, how do we accommodate pedestrian, because it is important.
Well, are these two goals of possibly improving rail in New Hampshire and access to pedestrian and bike paths, some of these rail trails are old rail beds. Are these two goals in conflict?
It depends on where you are. We've had some people reach out to us on some rail beds that are inactive right now that would like to, take the rail up and use those as rail trails. And I think that that's a discussion that we're going to continually have, because we don't know where the future lies for rail. So if we give those rail beds up today and 20 years from now or less than 20 years from now that we need to get those back for passenger or freight rail, for example, then we've got to have those difficult discussions with those rail trail folks to take them back. So we take a very slow, methodical, measured response, I think, when it comes to rail trails and where are we going in the future.
You got to kind of hold off to see what the plans are.
Exactly.
One last question for you, Commissioner. You know, as you know much better than me, it's budget season, and I wonder what's coming up next for you in terms of talking to the legislature, talking to the governor, making sure this upcoming budget is what you hope it will be.
Well, I think that all state agencies are asking to do more, trying to do more with less, whether it's less people or less funding. And I think that the Department of Transportation, we've been living under that rule for the last, certainly many, many years. I want to say the last two biennium, but we just have to continue to use the taxpayers' funds in the most wise, efficient way possible and just continue to be efficient. And continue to push the envelopes in terms of what we can do by using technology and stretching the value of the dollar, like microsurfacing, for example, instead of doing a full reclamation, doing a microsurfacing that you may get another 5 or 10 years out of it. So,
all right. Well, Commissioner Clement, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Christopher Clement. Again, he's the Commissioner of New Hampshire's Department of Transportation. Previously, he served as the Director of the Governor's Office of Stimulus before becoming Deputy Commissioner. He was sworn in September of 2011 as commissioner. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.